On the morning of her first meeting with Nils Spar, Leia climbed out of bed with tired eyes and a fatigue in her limbs that made her feel as if she were on the verge of being ill. Her grogginess persisted through breakfast. As she dressed for her meeting with the Viceroy of the Duskan League, she thought only about falling back into bed for a nap. The temptation got stronger once she reached the final briefing. The conference room seemed to be full of bodies, and everyone seemed to be talking to her at once.
"Almost everything we know about the Kurnacht cluster is 30 years old. It was in Imperial hands from the time of the Clone Wars until shortly after the Battle of Endor. The Empire didn't allow anyone in, and until now the Yveatha haven't seemed interested in coming out."
"As near as we can tell, the Duskan League only includes the 11 worlds populated by the Yveatha. We believe that there are as many as 17 worlds in the Kurnacht cluster that are populated by other species, and not part of the Duskan League."
"Intelligence hasn't been able to find a single civilian pilot who'll admit to having gone into the Kurnacht cluster."
"Why doesn't intelligence have better information for us? Where does a viceroy stand in the Duskan power structure?"
"I don't think there's any question but that Nils Spar represents more worlds, a larger population, greater material riches, and a more advanced industrial technological base than anyone who's come to Imperial City in the last 12 years. And he probably knows it, too."
"Leia, from a strategic standpoint, it sure would be nice to have a friend that big sitting between us and whatever Admiral Dalla's doing in the Corps. Right now, Kurnacht is one of the soft spots along the inner line."
Shaking her head, Leia pushed herself away from the table and started toward the door. Lightheadedness halted her steps halfway across the room. As she swayed unsteadily, Admiral Akbar hastened to her side and took her arm.
"Help me to my office," she whispered.
In the privacy of the president's suite, Akbar helped Leia settle on a thickly padded couch.
"What is happening to you?" Akbar asked. "Should I signal the medical droid?"
"No, I'll be all right. I just want to lie down for a few moments. There was no air in that conference room."
"You don't look well. Do you want to postpone?"
She shook her head almost imperceptibly.
"No. No, it would just complicate things. Nils Spar expects to meet in private with the Chief of State of the New Republic. That's what he insisted on. That's what we agreed to. We can't make any changes an hour before the session without giving offense."
Leia closed her eyes. "Just go away and let me have a few minutes of quiet. I'll be ready when the time comes. This isn't a crisis. Everything will be fine." In a subtle bit of choreography arranged by the protocol attachés for both sides, Princess Leia Organa Solo, President of the New Republic, and Nils Spar, Viceroy of the Duskan League, entered the Grand Hall from opposite sides at exactly the same moment. Leia's strides were measured and steady. She had spent some time alone in meditation, opening her connection to the Force and drawing on its deep, powerful current, allowing the flow to cleanse and refresh her body and mind. Nils Spar matched her pace, stride for stride. His eyes were strikingly human, distracting Leia at first from the high ruff of armor at the back of his neck and the bold streaks of facial color that disappeared under the soft swirl of fabric he wore on his head. His gaze was open and friendly, his smile disarming. The Yveathan was dressed as he had been on the streets in all the surveillance recordings Leia had seen, in a close-fitting, long-sleeved brown tunic, narrow-legged pants tucked into his boots, and beige gloves that disappeared up the sleeves of his tunic. By unspoken agreement, each of them stopped when the other was a long stride out of arm's reach.
"Viceroy?" Leia said, and bowed.
"Princess Leia." Nils Spar bowed in turn. "I am so pleased to be here with you. This is how it should be. You, the head of a confederacy of worlds, strong, proud, prosperous. Me, the head of a confederacy of worlds, strong, proud, prosperous. You have welcomed me as an equal, and I welcome you in the same fashion.
Thank you, Viceroy. Would you like to sit?
Leia gestured toward two chairs which faced each other in the middle of the room.
By all means.
Nils Spar seated himself.
How pleased I would be if we should be able to forge an alliance which will benefit those we love.
That's the entire purpose of the New Republic.
Leia deliberately sidestepped the word alliance as if it were quicksand. I think that if you'll speak to the leaders of some of the 100 worlds which have become members in the last 28 days, you'll hear that the benefits are substantial and immediate.
I do not doubt it. One need only look at the miracle of Coruscant. Was it not but half a dozen years ago that this world was ravaged by the clone emperor himself?
Yes.
And now I find it rebuilt from its own ashes to a new glory that rivals the stories of old. And there are so many of you. I'm certain I saw more different species in my first hour here than I did in my entire previous life. How does it all work? Is membership political or genetic?
The New Republic is a mutual self-protection pact among over 400 sentient species, and an economic partnership between 11,000 inhabited worlds. But you'll find that the autonomy of member worlds is hardly compromised at all.
So long as they are willing to be cooperative and tolerant.
Puzzled, Leia felt as though the ground had suddenly shifted under her.
I don't think a legation has ever come to Coruscant expecting to be anything else. And since you raised the issue, would you mind telling me why you and your legation are here?
Not at all. As impressed as I am with your ideas, your capital city, and your confederation, the Duskin League is not interested in membership in the New Republic, not collectively, and not as individual worlds. What I seek is an agreement between equals, to the benefit of both.
Leia frowned. I think you should know right now that it'll be very hard for us to come to an agreement between equals that'll allow us to respond militarily if you're threatened.
Truly, you do not yet understand. We do not want or need your protection. We enjoyed the protection of the Empire for half my lifetime, and we are determined to avoid such blessings in the future. What we want, more than anything, is to be left alone. Bear that in mind, and we may begin to speak the same language.
For the next hour, they worked at teasing out what the language of alliance might sound like. Despite apparent good faith, they constantly stumbled over conflicting assumptions, and their progress was hard to measure. But at midday, when the Viceroy gathered himself and stood, he pronounced,
"This has been valuable and enjoyable. Shall we resume in 1 hour?"
"I'd be happy to continue through lunch. We could have food brought to us."
Nils Spar looked momentarily shocked.
"With all apologies, that is not possible. My people hold it a great affront to propriety to take food in mixed company."
"My apologies. In 1 hour, then."
The debriefing session included Leia, Admiral Akbar for the Fleet Office, Admiral Drayson standing in for Intelligence Director General Rikan, Chairman Ben Kilnam for the Senate, First Administrator Eng, 2 recorder droids, and 6 senior aides. Everyone listened without interruption as Leia recounted her conversation with Nils Spar. Drayson was the first to respond.
"According to the Viceroy, it's been 9 years since the occupation ended. I don't think we can guess how extensively they may have rearmed. That ship sitting over at Eastport certainly testifies to their engineering abilities."
"I don't think it matters," Leia said. "There's no question in my mind that they feel threatened by us. I think it's critical that we give them reason not to be."
"If they do feel threatened, that should provide you with useful leverage," said Ben Kilnam.
"I'm not looking for leverage. That's the wrong tone for these talks."
As the meeting came to a close, Drayson asked if he might speak with Leia in private. When they were alone, he spoke solemnly.
I'm concerned about the fact that all your advisors must rely on second-hand reports. It makes it difficult for them to provide you with the independent counsel you expect from them.
What are you suggesting?
That I arrange for more eyes and ears in the room with you. I could provide you with a burst transmission comlink, small enough that even General Solo would be hard-pressed to find it.
I don't expect to be frisked by the Viceroy, Leia said curtly. And I won't take the chance of confirming their worst fears by being caught spying.
The Yvathan ground skimmer that picked up Nilspar in the bowels of the Imperial City Administrative Complex discharged him a few minutes later in the embassy ship Aramedia. As soon as the hatch closed behind him, Nilspar found himself in a sanitary entry station. Quickly removing his clothing, he dropped it into a sterile incinerator. Then he stepped into the scrub chamber. With eyes closed, he invoked the needle spray showers. First the gentle rain of the fumigant, then the agonizing bite of the scrub jets. Then he passed through the inner door, where waiting hands draped his body in a fire-blue gown.
Viceroy,
the attaché said, bowing.
Nilspar accepted the heavy silver viceroy's neck guard and fastened it in place.
Thank you, Eri. I must resign myself to it. Their vermin stink never leaves my nostrils, no matter how long I stay in the scrub chamber.
An air cart whisked him up 11 levels to the domain of Vordul, Proctor of Information Science for the Aramedia. Nilspar greeted him.
Were you able to receive a signal?
Without interruption.
Nilspar nodded.
What do you think of them?
They seem to me weak, gullible, eager to please. She is no match for you.
The data card that Admiral Hiram Drayson dropped into the data pad on his desk looked for all the world like a standard universal data exchange card, but the cards used by Alpha Blue for sensitive information had a non-standard encoding, which made the card appear blank when placed in a standard data pad. It could even be erased and reformatted without destroying the information it bore. In this case, excerpts from a recording made earlier that day by a tiny audio telescope concealed in the ornate scrollwork on the ceiling of the Great Hall. He listened.
I think you should know right now that it'll be very hard for us to come to an agreement between equals that'll allow us to respond militarily if you're threatened.
Drayson thought as he listened, I wish you'd chosen to let us into that room with you, Princess. But I'll do all I can to make certain you don't look back on that choice with regret. Inside the protective cocoon of Luke Skywalker's secret hermitage, time had no meaning. Sealed behind windowless walls, he lived in darkness for days at a time, barely conscious of hunger, thirst, or other bodily demands. The winds howled outside the hermitage, but Luke was oblivious to them. His solitude was complete, timeless, and undisturbed. Then a visitor came, and everything changed. It was his ordinary senses reawakened that informed Luke of another presence. First a sound, which he later realized was his own name. A woman stood in the chamber with him, half a dozen steps away. Her shoulders were bare, her throat covered by a scarf that vanished down her back. Her hair was long and braided, her clothing soft and flattering. Her eyes were dark, intent, and knowing. He took her at first for a projection, because it was unthinkable that anyone could have passed through the walls without alerting him, but then he touched her bare arm and knew she was real. "Explain yourself," he said.
"You are him. You are Luke, son to Anakin." She smiled with delight. "Forgive me. I thought I would never find you."
"Where did you come from?"
"From Karatos," she said, naming a planet in a system 40 parsecs from Coruscant.
As rudely as his visitor had invaded his hermitage, Luke suddenly invaded her mind, probing the secret place where sensitivity to the Force resided. If she possessed the sort of talent her actions claimed for her, he should be thrown halfway across the room when her reflex repelled his mental touch. It was so with every Jedi he had probed, every candidate he had brought to Yavin for training. Luke's probing met no resistance. He felt no shields blunting or deflecting his exam. But still, she had found him. "Who are you?" he asked. She laughed.
"Forgive me. I am Akana of the Falanasi, an adept of the White Current."
"I'm afraid I don't know your people or that path."
"I know. You won't find us in your senses or the Emperor's or the Old Republic's. It's not our way to claim lands and raise flags. But you should know us. That's part of why I've come."
Luke was puzzled. "If your people are such ciphers, why should I know you?"
"Because your mother is one of us, Luke Skywalker."
Luke stared. "My mother? Are you saying my mother might be alive?"
"I don't know. Who saw her fall? Where is her grave? I wish I could answer your question, but I don't even know my own mother's fate. I've been separated from the body of my people for too many years."
"Separated? Why?"
"I was away when the Empire came to the world we called home then. The Falanasi had to take flight because they would not let themselves and their gifts be used for violence and evil. I don't blame them. I know they must have waited for me as long as they could. That was 19 years ago. I was 12. Not much more than a child."
"And you never found them again?" There was a touch of suspicion in Luke's voice. "You found me."
She smiled tolerantly. "The Falanasi are more practiced at hiding than you are, Luke Skywalker. And there isn't much an abandoned child can do in the middle of a war to search for a family that doesn't want to be found."
"So you're looking for them now? And you say my mother could be with them?" He shook his head. "My mother. She's been such a mystery to me my whole life. I don't even know her name."
"She may have had other names, many of us do, but she is known as Nashira. I've come here to ask you to go away with me and help me find our people so that you and I can both be whole again."
"I don't know who you are. I don't know that anything you've said is true."
"Then I will tell you some things that you know are true. Your father was lost to the dark side, and you were forced to try to kill him. Perhaps that is why you cannot let yourself love without fear. Perhaps that is why you have no children of your own. You must fear that someday you will find yourself ready to kill your own son, and him ready to kill you."
"No."
"You must fear yourself. How could you not, having walked the path you have? The bond that links you to all the horrors of Darth Vader's reign is a terrible burden. Is that not why you're here?"
Luke shook his head. "No, you can't know that. I've voiced those fears to no one. No one." Akana glided closer. "They're written in your eyes and lie heavy on your spirit. You'd see them yourself, but for the blindness we all have when we look in a mirror." Their eyes met. Luke felt her gaze like a light cast into the dark corners of his psyche. She had taken down all his shields, and he was defenseless against her.
"Will you come with me, Luke Skywalker?"
"I don't know. There's something I must do first. Someone I need to tell."
"Leia?"
"Yes. Will you wait here while I go see her?"
"Of course. I've waited long enough for this night. I can wait a little longer for our journey to begin."
Without warning, Leia sat bolt upright in bed, breaking Han's embrace.
"He's coming here tonight."
"Who is?"
"Luke."
She threw back the sheet and climbed out of bed.
"He's coming to see us."
Leia ran out to meet Luke on the garden trail as soon as the E-Wing sat down. She kissed his cheek and took his arm.
"I knew you'd come."
"Leia, I may have some new information about our mother."
What new information? Where does it come from?
I don't want to tell you yet. I'm hoping you'll let me probe your mind again first. I have an idea what to look for now.
Her body language foretold her answer. She held herself back from him, arms wrapped around herself, her mouth hard, her eyes angry. No. Go back to wherever you came from.
She turned abruptly and started back toward the residence.
Luke found her in the kitchen, sitting on a stool at the meal bar, cupping a tall glass in both hands and staring out the window. This is important for both of us, Leia. For your children, too.
Luke's glance acknowledged Han, who was standing in the doorway, leaning against the frame. I think there really might be a chance to break through and discover our mother as a real person.
Why?
Leia turned toward him, and he saw the weariness in her eyes.
You've probed me more times than I can remember. You had R2 and 3PO on Obra Sky for months searching the libraries for any clue.
She emptied her glass and set it down on the bar.
You and I sat in a Jedi meditation circle for hours on end, night after night, calling on Obi-Wan and Anakin and Yoda, Owen and Beru, my foster parents, anyone we knew of who might have known her. Calling her, too. Remember?
I remember.
You're obsessed with the past. It's been 14 years, Luke, and we're not hard to find. At least I'm not.
But there might be reasons we don't know of for her not to come to us. She may need to protect those who protected her.
She's dead, Luke. You and I are foundlings. That's how it is, like it or not. Our family tree starts here, with this family and these children. So you do what you think you have to, brother. Go chase whatever shadow of a clue you like. I don't care about any of it. Don't ask for my help again. And don't bring the past into this house. I've had enough of it for 10 lifetimes.
Like most small sports spacecraft with bold names, Akana's Verpine Adventurer offered few amenities, technical or personal. It had no weapons, combat shields, or astromech droid, and its sublight speed rating was a meager 2.5. But the pilot station was roomy enough for Luke to forego his service flight suit in favor of looser, more casual clothing, and the small cargo hold had more than room enough for his one modest bag, beside Akana's luggage and supplies. After ordering the R-71 droid to destroy the hermitage if anyone should breach the perimeter, Luke climbed in beside Akana.
Our destination is Lukazik, she said as they buckled themselves in. That was our last home. We'll start our search there.
In deep space, far from any star, the Teljikon Vagabond drifted in the darkness, silent and inert. Trailing well behind was the much smaller black-hulled intelligence ferret IX-44F, one ghost shadowing another. The ferret was nearly as inert as its quarry. It announced itself only with periodic position updates broadcast to Coruscant by Hypercom and by an optical laser pulse aimed directly aft. Following the ferret's beacon, Pakpakat's armada had taken days to close the gap, its slow, silent approach that of an infinitely patient predator. Spreading out in intercept formation were the 3 spotter ships, 2 escorts, and the Lightning, a converted Pranawe racer, assigned to make complete recordings of the intercept attempt. If the Vagabond tried to run in normal space, it was Lightning's job to run with it. The cruiser Glorious, the gunship Marauder, and the pilotless ferret D-89 closed with the shadowing ferret so slowly that at times an impatient Lando thought they would never reach it.
"We've gone far beyond prudent," he grumbled to Lobot. "I'm beginning to suspect the Hortek hunt by boring their prey to death."
But finally, the hour came when all 10 ships were in position.
IX-44F and its 3-man crew were relieved to return to base, and the Glorious took up its position.
"What do you think is inside, General Calrissian?"
asked Pakpakat as they stood together at the main bridge viewport.
"Why is it here? Where is it going? Have you and your staff made any progress on the signal fragment from the initial monitorship contact?"
Colonel, you know our hands have been tied by your blackout orders,
Lando said.
We've had hardly any bandwidth available to us on the Hypercom. Lady Luck doesn't have the kind of data capacity you have here on Glorious.
I will take that as a report of no progress.
With a light touch on the main viewport's controls, Pak Pikot sharpened the outline and detail of the Vagabond.
Look at it, General. For all we know, it may be 500 years old, or 50,000. Do you know that no ship like this appears in any registry of any New Republic world? As far as we know, no other like it was ever made.
Our catalog of everything that ever was is a long way from being complete. The odds favor a less exotic history.
How can a gambler post the odds without knowing the game?
We will watch them for a while. We'll let them watch us for a while as well.
Can you live with that, General?
Lando's skin prickled to hear echoes of his private impatience in Pak Pikot's words.
For now, Colonel. I just hope whoever or whatever's inside that thing isn't busy making plans to destroy it to keep it out of our hands.
Pak Pikot's expression was unreadable.
I will ask the communications officer to allot what slack time there may be in our hypercom queue to your staff. Perhaps that will allow you to make faster progress.
Lando replied with courtly politeness. Thank you, Colonel. That'd be a step in the right direction. Lieutenant Norda Proy of the New Republic Fleet studied the high-resolution scan of space directly ahead of her ship, the Steadfast. The 3D display showed more than 12,000 objects, from hundreds no larger than a stormtrooper's combat boot, to one that promised to be the aft third of an Imperial Star Destroyer. What a mess. Must have been one wild party. For nearly a year, the fleet hauler Steadfast had traced a solitary course through what had once been Imperial space. Their mission orders took them to the coordinates of major battles between the Empire and its enemies, where they searched through the wreckage for objects or information of potential value.
I have a positive identification on the wreck, Lieutenant,
a junior intelligence officer called out.
It's the I-class star destroyer Nisnal, reported destroyed by internal explosions.
Norda Proy nodded.
All right, let's move in.
First aboard the wreck were half a dozen scanning and monitoring droids. Working in pairs so anything that happened to one would be documented by the other, the droids fanned out according to a search plan tailored to that class of vessel. At a console in Steadfast's forward hold, the crew monitored the steady stream of images and sensor data the droids sent back. On the screen, they could see more than 40 workstations, their displays shattered, arrayed in two half-circles. All faced a 2-meter-tall metallic cylinder, which stood on a platform against the far wall. On either side of the cylinder were digital display panels as wide as blast doors, an ever-changing array of multicolored messages in basic and binary filled most of the face of the left panel. Awed, Proy took a deep breath.
By my mother's jewels.
What is it? The intelligence officer asked.
Our return ticket to Coruscant. An intact Imperial memory core.
Back on Coruscant, five different teams made up of crack information science specialists, aided by speedy analysis droids, immediately set out to find the patterns in the gibberish code of the memory core. Team 3 assembled the first fragmentary string, made up of the names and ranks of two of Nisnal's command officers. Within a day, Team 5 had found an even longer string containing a standard Imperial Hypercom message header. The final breakthrough belonged to Team 3 again, the complete 15-point standing maintenance order for a TIE bomber. Its more than 1,400 sequential data bits seemed to map every detail of the new algorithm. Confirmation came quickly. An interface droid was programmed with the new algorithm and linked to the Nisnal core. And this time, tens of thousands of object and data files poured forth. Each file was copied, tagged, classified, and forwarded to the analysis section for distribution. One of them, given the ID number AK031995 and a priority code of most urgent, ended up in the hands of Idadar Nylikirka, whose assignment was asset tracking. Nylikirka soon realized that in the entire history of the asset tracking office, no one had ever had available what he now had before him. A complete Imperial order of battle. It was all there. Every warship by name, class, call sign, and commander, assigned to every fleet and combat command, every stormtrooper company and infantry battalion, assigned to every transport, occupation force, outpost, and fort, every cripple in a dry dock, and every keel in a shipyard with projected repair and completion dates. It was a treasure beyond price. The order of battle encompassed information far beyond what ordinary ship captains and task force commanders would have at their disposal. Information that only a ranking sector commander or the Emperor's own military aides would possess. Idadar Nylikirka did not leave his desk for 3 days. When, at last, he did, it was not to go home. With his data pad tucked tightly under his arm, he headed for Victory Lake and the home of Admiral Akbar. The track outside the officers' gymnasium at fleet headquarters wound its way for a kilometer over hilly, wooded ground. Secured, shielded, and privacy-screened, it had been used many times for discreet, deniable meetings, not least by the man for whom Admiral Akbar waited in the cool morning air. As the runner drew near, Akbar stepped out from the trees.
"I see you are still a creature of habit, Hiram,"
he said with cheerful gruffness. Admiral Hiram Drayson slowed from his brisk jog to a walk.
"I see you're still as slothful as ever. It's been a long time since you've been in the gym."
Akbar fell in beside Drayson.
"I do not much enjoy coming here, but sometimes I have no choice. Will you take pity and walk with me a while?"
"I think I can accommodate myself to your pace. What's new?"
"I had a visit last night from the senior analyst of asset tracking. He has been studying the Imperial Order of Battle, taken from the Nishnal a month ago. He has found a discrepancy."
"Another katana?"
"Nothing so large or clear-cut. What the young man has discovered is this. There are an unusual number of vessels assigned to the Empire's Black Sword Command that we cannot account for."
"Black Sword Command defended the center of the Empire's Rim territories."
"Yes."
Akbar gasped for breath. He placed a hand on Drayson's shoulder.
"Please, may we stop? The older I get, the harder it is for me to keep my lungs wet in air."
Drayson stopped and faced the Admiral.
"Of course, you were saying?"
"According to the analyst, the order of battle for Black Sword includes 44 capital ships, which we have not seen nor heard of since the fall of the Emperor. None smaller than a Victory-class star destroyer. 3 are super-class vessels."
Drayson whistled. "What do you think of his analysis?"
"I find it indisputable."
"You know that that's more than enough firepower to overwhelm any planetary system in the New Republic, Coruscant included."
"Yes. If those ships still exist, they represent a serious threat."
"If?"
"If. You see, there are many wrinkles to this matter. All but 5 of the 44 were either newly laid keels or in a yard somewhere for refit or major repairs."
"Which yards?"
"We cannot say. The names given are either not known to us or are code names for places we do know. But what I am concerned about is that the Empire preferred to establish military shipyards in every sector they controlled, so that no one facility was critical to the war effort and damaged ships did not need to travel far for repairs."
Drayson frowned.
"Which would suggest that those unidentified yards were likely located somewhere in Black Sword Command's patrol area."
"And that would mean that as many as 20 star destroyers could be very much closer to us than the Corps. There are large areas of Kokash and Farlax which have never been properly surveyed, including the Morath Nebula and the Kurnacht Cluster.
Ah, said Dresden. I see where this is leading.
Hiram, I don't want to know how you might know the answers, but I know you have resources not available outside your office. I'm worried about this business with Nilspar. Negotiations have been at a standstill for weeks, and yet Leia still urges patience. And I wonder to myself, could the Yveatha be hiding these ships? Is it possible the Duskan League is still allied with the Corps?
After a moment's measured consideration, Drayson said,
I have no information to support such a thesis, or to rule it out.
Then I am at a loss as to how to proceed. The negotiations in progress make this a delicate matter. I cannot make accusations without evidence, nor can I ignore a potential threat of this magnitude.
What would you do if the decision were yours?
I believe we should begin a search for this Black Fleet. We must know the fate of these ships.
Drayson nodded thoughtfully.
And I think you should take this information to Princess Leia and make that recommendation. Perhaps she'll allow you to persuade her.
Akbar sighed.
I fear otherwise. Still, I can but try.
He then pressed a data card into Drayson's hand.
The list of the missing ships.
Princess Leia turned away from the broad transparasteel of the executive conference room to face Admiral Akbar and General Abbott, the commander of the Fifth Fleet.
Let me make sure I understand. No one has seen any of these vessels for 10 years, and that's why you're worried about them?
Akbar and Abbott exchanged looks, negotiating who would answer. Akbar lost.
Essentially, that is correct.
Why doesn't that sound as silly to you as it does to me? No one is going to attack the New Republic.
Both Akbar and Abbott were stunned by her pronouncement.
If you're so sure of that, then let's mothball the fleet and muster out the troops, Abbott said scornfully. I'm sure we all have better things we could be doing.
General, it's because of the fleet that no one's going to attack us.
Akbar tells me we can now call on more ships than fought on both sides in the largest battle of the rebellion.
Yes, Princess, but there is more to consider, Akbar said forcefully. If this Black Fleet exists, and if it is operational, it represents a secret weapon. And it is the nature of secret weapons to upset all the careful planning of one's adversaries.
Leia sighed. I really don't need this right now. What exactly are you recommending?
General Abbott answered.
Princess, the Fifth Fleet is about to sail on its show-the-flag excursion. I would suggest to you that searching for the Black Fleet would be a better use of those ships.
You realize, of course, that the Kurnacht Cluster is in Farlax. Akbar nodded.
Yes, of course.
Then you realize you'll have to exempt Kurnacht from any search. Nilspar has been adamant about territorial integrity. Their claim extends to the entire cluster. Once again, Akbar and Abbott exchanged glances. This time, Abbott lost.
Princess, perhaps you can explain to me the logic in starting a search and announcing a safe hiding place at the same time.
Akbar said there are over 200 inhabited worlds in that region, Leia said.
That should give you enough to keep you busy until I've reached an agreement with the Yveatha. As her next meeting with Nilspar was drawing to a close, Leia said,
Viceroy, before we recess for the day, I wonder if you might be able to satisfy my curiosity on a historical matter.
Nilspar bowed his head.
If I can, Princess, I am not an historian.
When the Empire occupied the League worlds, did they establish any shipyards there?
Oh, yes, several of them. This history I am well acquainted with. We Yveatha are skilled in matters of making. It is a gift of our very being.
But the Empire turned our gifts into a curse. Thousands of my people were forced to work as slaves to repair the very machines that were used to oppress us and to wage war on your rebellion.
When the Empire left Cournacht,
they took all that they could with them and destroyed what they could not, killing more than 6,000 Yavetha in the process. It was one final act of savagery to end a reign of cruelty. But tell me, Princess, how is it that you ask this question?
My defense advisors have become concerned about the possibility of old Imperial capital ships in the patrol area of the Black Sword Command, Farlax and Hatawa. It's more a matter of bookkeeping than anything else, but I've had to give my permission for some further investigation.
Your advisors are only prudent to insist on it. Tell me, how many ships are they seeking?
44. Viceroy, I can't offer you anything but my goodwill, but you could be of great help to me in what should be a small matter. If you could ask your historians to look at the list of missing ships and relay what you can about the fate of any that may have been in Cournacht.
You ask us to revisit old unpleasantries. Nevertheless, my mission is to protect my people. If I can help put the fears of your advisors to rest, then I am serving that duty. Give me the list. I will transmit it to the Proctor of Records and Antiquities.
Akbar wheezed for breath as he walked along the cinder track beside Drayson.
I want you to know, Admiral, that I do not plan to make a habit of idle exercise.
I thought you should know that Leia gave him the list.
What?
At the third session this evening.
She should not have done that,
Akbar said darkly.
What could she be thinking?
In effect, she asked him to search his own pockets, so the fifth doesn't have to frisk him.
Akbar shook his head.
How foolish of her. There's one bright spot to consider, though. When he transmits that list home, we should finally be able to break their encryption key.
Things did not work out as planned. After Nilspar and Leia's meeting the next morning, Drayson reported to Admiral Akbar, revealing the Yavathan's deception. Though Nilspar assured Leia that all the ships on the list had been destroyed in the shipyards, Drayson knew he never transmitted the list home. So, you see, we can go back to the original plans for the Fifth Fleet, Leia explained patiently to Admiral Akbar. This needlessly provocative mission to Hatawa and Farlax isn't necessary. There's no Black Fleet hiding there. Admiral Akbar scanned the list of ships and handed it to General Abbat, sitting to his right at the great conference table.
Princess, I do not believe this changes anything. It is my intention that General Abbat carry out the search mission as planned.
Leia's face showed open surprise. I don't understand, Admiral. I'm satisfied that the Viceroy's word is good.
Why?
Challenged Abbat.
Because you like him. Have you led such a sheltered life that you've never been lied to by someone you liked before?
General,
Akbar said reprovingly.
Princess, I must remind you that you are the one who agreed to meet with him alone. We are at a disadvantage in judging his motives, but that is not the issue.
What is?
Whether we are ready to accept that we are now a great power. Princess, a third of that region is now aligned with the Republic. Another third or more is unclaimed, uninhabited, or under dispute. Even if you accept the Duskan hegemony over all of Cournacht, they control barely a tenth of the region. We have every right to be there.
Because no government there can stop us? Demanded Leia. Is that the morality you think the New Republic should be following? You sound more like an advisor to the Emperor.
Leia, we must follow our own principles or they are meaningless, said Akbar. Under Article 11 of the Charter, we proclaim a principle of free navigation. Both interstellar space and hyperspace are owned by none and open to all. We recognize no territorial claims beyond the boundaries of a single star system. Do you believe in the principle of free navigation?
Of course.
Then there is no precedent for the Duskin League's claim to an entire star cluster. I am willing to accept that we will choose not to enter Kuonacht at this time. I am not willing to accept that we have no right to go there.
It's what the Duskin League is willing to accept that matters here.
Not more than our principles, said Abbott, and not more than our own security. The idea that we should stay away from Tharlax because it might upset the Yavetha is absurd.
Leia's eyes flashed dark anger. General, you sound like you don't care about the possibility of alienating the Duskin League.
I'm afraid the General is right, said Akbar. We cannot sacrifice our freedom of action simply to please a would-be ally. If you do not agree to let the fleet's orders stand, you will have to find someone to replace me. I cannot continue without your confidence.
Leia closed her eyes and bowed her head slightly. Searching her heart, she could not find the strength to resist Akbar's earnest certainty. Very well. The orders stand.